This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Good morning, Anthony Reich. How are you?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov, Chanukah Sameach, and of course, happy 2025.
And to you too.
Now that we're into the new year, we can all hope that this year will be much, much better for all of us than last year. And I hope that all of you will enjoy good things in 2025. And to start the year, it has been published that Israel's population has risen above a magical 10 million number over the course of the last year. There's a natural growth rate in spite of the war and in spite of everything that's going on. There are a few different factors contributing. It's interesting to note that quite a number of Israelis actually left during the course of the last year. Almost 100,000 people left the country as a result of the war situation, as a result of the stress that we've all been going through. That was somewhat set off by the 23,800 Israelis who'd been living abroad who decided to return back home, and another 32,800 Jews who immigrated to live in Israel during the course of the last year. Now, as we would expect during all time, immigration has actually fallen by quite a large amount. It fell by 33% during the course of the last year as opposed to the previous year. Nevertheless, 181,000 new babies were born. And so all of that has contributed towards a slightly lower growth rate, still growing, but growing a little slower as a result of the last year. We've now hit the magical 10 million number, of which 7.7 million people living in Israel are Jewish and 2.1 million people living in Israel are Arabs. So that's how we start our year, counting to see how we're doing, and some interesting numbers to keep us occupied and interested.
Anthony, where are the Christians in that? Do you have figures for the Christian population? Because that's also quite a sizable population.
Christians are sort of all lumped into the other categories. So if we say that there's 7.7 million Jews and there are 2.1 million Arabs, that means 9.8 million. It means that we effectively have approximately 200 to 250,000 others, which is not a very, very substantial population. The Christians, the Druze, the Bedouins, everybody else falls into the other category, and it's a relatively small number. But of course, Israel, being the democracy that it is, respects everybody's rights to whatever religion they choose to worship and to adhere to. And of course, all religions have access to the various holy sites that are special to those religions, not only people living in Israel, but indeed people who come from abroad. So religion is not a thing, but this is the Jewish state, and more than 70% of the people living here are Jewish.
That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. Anthony, the next question I'm going to ask you, I have to tell you that it's actually causing a nauseous response within me, because I know that they're not going to stick to it. And that is, Hamas has made a number of new demands in the negotiations to free Israeli hostages from Gaza. What are the demands?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you say they're not going to stick to it, let's first get them to actually agree something to which they are supposed to stick, and then let's see if they stick to it, because it's kind of a moving feast. Every time we feel we're getting closer, then it seems as if the rug is pulled out from under us in terms of renegotiating everything. So here, I think, are the most important aspects of where we stand right now. We were all praying, hoping for a Hanukkah miracle. On this, the seventh day of Hanukkah, we can still hope there's another day to go. As in the time of the Maccabees, with every passing day, the miracle became greater. When the oil burned for one or two or three or four days, that was miraculous. By the time we got to five, six, seven, and even the eighth day, it was even more miraculous. So let's hope that as Hanukkah goes by, the miracles will count up. But this is what we know right now. It is kind of commonly accepted that out of the 100 names who are still considered to be in Gaza, around 34 of these people are still alive. That's a number that's being bandied about, 34 living hostages. And the Israeli negotiators have demanded that all 34 hostages are released in the first phase, including those who might be considered to be soldiers or who might be considered to be not so medically unfit, because there are various categories of hostages that have been mentioned, those who are elderly, those who are medically unwell, those who are young, whatever. There are certain categories, and they, the women, they're supposed to be the ones who are released first. But the Israeli side is saying, we've got 34 names. We don't have 34 names. We think that there are 34 hostages who are alive, and we want all of them to be freed. One of the issues is that Hamas won't release the names, and so we don't exactly know who the 34 are, but that's the number that's commonly bandied about. Hamas is reportedly refusing to release 12 of those 34, instead suggesting that they will release the bodies of 12 of those hostages who were killed, instead of 12 live people. We understand that the Prime Minister is standing firm, saying that he doesn't want the release of bodies, at least not in the first stage of the deal. He wants live people. And then, in addition to this, Hamas has upped the number of security prisoners that it is demanding to be released, currently standing at around 250 security prisoners, in exchange only for the sick, the children, and the elderly. That was the latest proposal. We don't know how many people that is, and out of the 34, but out of the weakest members of those who are being held alive in Gaza, we're being told that Hamas is demanding 250 security prisoners. And the other thing that Hamas has been reported to demand is to have a week of ceasefire in Gaza in return for simply releasing the names of those who are on the list of 34. Now, you know, all of this just seems to be throwing all the balls back into the air again, after we've been told that there were just one or two last remaining details to be buttoned down. But when we read a report like this, it feels like there is very little progress, that there are very little agreed ideals, agreed principles in this whole constellation. And it's all still, well, we don't know the names, we don't know the numbers, we don't know how many people will be released, we don't know what the stages are. It all kind of feels very not agreed and not buttoned down. And so I don't, unfortunately, have a great deal of optimism about where this is all going. It just feels like it's negotiations in order to keep this on the front pages of the press, without there really being any intention to actualize this at the end. That's at least my impression, which is a very, very sad situation. And that's really been borne out by some of the reports that have come from the US. One of the things that Hamas did say is that they've promised to release 22 hostages in the first stage, that at least is their proposal, of which they say two are the Russian, two Russian hostages who are being held in Gaza. This is supposedly some sort of a gesture to Russian President Putin, but we don't really know, and we haven't had signs of life. So even if we might be talking about individual names, we are still not 100% convinced from what we know right now that these are people who are still alive. So unfortunately, we seem quite far away from realizing any hostage release in the, certainly before the end of Hanukkah. And some people are saying that by the time President Trump takes office on the 20th of January, I think it will be that it is unlikely that this will have been resolved.
Anthony, one of the lead stories on Reuters this morning is, this is the headline, amid ceasefire push, Palestinians released from Israeli jails bear mental and physical scars. Now, there's a guy, so Reuters spoke to four Palestinian men detained by Israel since the war's outbreak. All were held for months, accused of affiliating with an illegal organization, and released without being formally charged or convicted of any crime. They've got a picture, they've got a video that you can go and watch, but they've got a picture of this guy who was supposedly a bodybuilder. He's dressed all in black, and he's got these black wristbands, right? His hair's neatly trimmed. He's got his beard that's neatly trimmed. this guy, they've got the same picture, or they've got a video of him leaving. And, you know, I don't know if when you were last in South Africa, but often at traffic lights, we have, often it's young men, and they are beggars. And they will pretend to have some kind of disability. And the wrist goes, firstly, they turn their wrist in, and then they'll make their body look disfigured. When I saw this video, that was the first thing that came to mind. It didn't ring true for me. Would you mind having a look? And perhaps we can talk about it at some point.
Yeah.
Because the problem with Reuters, well, it's not a problem. It's how news is disseminated. This story, as a lead story on Reuters, is going to be disseminated to millions of news outlets around the world.
So I haven't seen the videos and I haven't seen the story, but I can already make some sort of a comment about all of that.
Okay.
Let's start by saying that we know for sure that there is huge amounts of misinformation which are being put out by the Palestinian side and which are being accepted by the news agencies as gospel, as obviously true without necessarily going into much fact-checking. Or aside from that, even if they do fact-checking, many of these news agencies do have the interest to present the Palestinian side as the Palestinians have always presented themselves, as victims. They are the underdogs, they are the victims. That is the rhetoric, that is the narrative that has served them so well over many, many years and decades, and that is the narrative that continues today. So to the extent that they can present the Palestinians as victims and as the underdogs and as being mistreated by Israel and others around the world, that, of course, will always go down in the international press and will always be very positively received by those people who have been convinced over many years that the Palestinians are the victims. Having said all of that, there is little doubt that Israel has arrested many people and taken them into jails, and there have been methods of trying to extract information out of them. There have been adjustments to their living conditions as a result of this war and as a result of Israeli hostages being held in Gaza. There is little doubt that being in an Israeli prison over the last year or two has been no fun, and that there are certainly methods employed by Israel to extract information out of people who are arrested.
Yes.
We also know that almost everybody in Gaza is connected in some way, shape, or form to the war and to the massacre that was perpetrated on October the 7th. There are almost no innocent people in the story. And what I mean is that even so-called innocent civilians who were not directly connected and who were not directly involved and may well even have opposed Hamas and their activities and the massacre. They may well even have opposed and been very much against that, but they were certainly in the know, and they knew that they had to stay away from it if they didn't want to get involved. That was kind of the best option. Say nothing rather than get right involved. So I think that there were really two main categories of people that we found in Gaza at the time. Those who were actively involved, no matter what jobs they had during their daily activities, and those who were maybe not actively involved, but sort of knew what was going on.
Well, passive.
They knew these tunnels exist. Yeah,
they
knew the tunnels
existed. Right.
Very complicit.
Yes.
And they knew things, they knew information. And so arresting people like that and extracting information out of them is a very legitimate way of getting good information, because these are people who are not part of the machinery, who don't necessarily agree with it, but still know a thing or two because there's a tunnel under their apartment, because people have used their apartment or their place of work in order to try to plan things, because they've heard people talking in the supermarkets, in the streets, they've heard people talking when they go out to social gatherings. So there really were two groups, those who were absolutely involved and those who were not. But it seems like almost everybody knew something that could be a valuable information to Israel. And so we see people who are so-called not charged and who are innocent and who were never involved being arrested by Israel in order to extract information. And being in an Israeli prison over the last year is no fun. And I have make no apologies for the fact that those who have been arrested and held in prison haven't necessarily been treated in the best possible way. They haven't been offered suites at the Hilton, as has been the case in the past when Palestinian prisoners have been held in Israeli jails. And I've driven
Jails be different to any other jail?
Yeah, well, I've driven past Israeli jails and I can see sometimes through the window, the TV flickering through the window. And I know that many of them are given access to education and they get familial visits and they get all kinds of, you know, conditions which Israeli prisoners in Gaza, Israeli hostages in Gaza certainly don't have access to. So we can make no apologies for some of the things that have gone on in Israeli jails in the interest of trying to extract information. And therefore, your Reuters story, and again, I haven't seen any of it,
yes,
probably has many elements of truth to it. But I think we, again, need to put it all into the right context.
100%. Anthony, that is where we leave it. Thank you so, so much for chatting to me today. And I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. I'm going to miss not chatting to you tomorrow. I'm just saying.
I'll be around, even though I won't be chatting to you, but I will still be around. I wish everybody a good 2025.
Thank you so much. Chag Sameach and Shabbat Shalom. I do apologize that your news is late, but this is very important conversations that we have with Anthony Reich. And that's it. Almost 3 minutes past eight.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.